from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Shulman, alongside Johnny Godomowicz. We don't have Owen Valentine today, but we have a very special guest in his place. The Houston Chronicle's Joseph Duarte is joining us for a special game day edition of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast in the lead up to the Sweet 16 matchup between number 2 Houston and number 11 Syracuse. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we're going to get into a lot of basketball, but I want to ask you first, you posted some pictures recently of you at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I would assume basketball is your number one sport. I may be assuming wrong, but where does racing rank up for you with basketball and everything else?
I'm a gearhead, and I used to cover baseball, so I was a seam head, but I did cover the Daytona 500 for many years while I was down covering Major League Baseball. So it grew on me. And typically when you come to an event like this, you're stuck in your hotel the whole time, especially with COVID going on, but they had a media event. So I figured, hey, let's go out and see what's going to happen out there. And next thing you know, they're like, hey, here's a Tahoe, hop in it. We're going to take some laps around Indy Motor Speedway. And we're on the back turn, and their radio, we have a radio in the car, and they basically said, hey, let's floor it a little bit. So they wanted us to get up to about 95, 100 on the straightaway. It was pretty cool. You know, it was a little slick out there from some rain, but it was an experience. It was fun. It was something different to do and break up the 24/7 basketball here. So I got in a few laps. My times wouldn't qualify, but it was still fun to do.
Wow, that is insane. I'm assuming you've never done anything like that before.
No, I hadn't. I've been on the bank track over at Daytona and got to hang around there and get inside the garages and stuff and see the NASCAR, cars, but nothing where I've actually been behind the wheel. So I'm surprised they trusted us doing it, but you know, there were about four. It was a pack of four cars, one after the other, and they just said, "Hey, let's do this." So it was neat. It was up there with in terms of experiences.
So it's obviously been a unique experience so far in Indy. How has it been with your coverage? Just everything COVID wise, but all the teams are in one place. Like, what has really changed for you?
Well, you know, it's been like that the entire season. You know, you're covering a team that's, you know, potentially on the verge of the Final Four, and you haven't been in the same room with them all season. You haven't seen them face to face. And these are guys that you've covered, you know, for 3 and 4 years now. So that's kind of been the interesting part. It's not as personal anymore. It's a lot harder to do the in-depth deep dive features just because you're not there. You only have a certain number of minutes on Zoom. I mean, I've been on Zoom calls where the school only has a 30-minute account and it gets cut off mid-sentence, so you don't even get the full interview at times. But I'm impressed that, you know, Houston now is at their 30th game tonight, and I didn't think that they would get anywhere close to that many games in. The fact that the tournament is centralized in one location and one state, the way they've been able to pull it off and only have one game that's been affected, it's amazing. And, you know, yeah, I know there's protocols in place, and it's for the right reasons. So it's been a different year. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, I think everybody will take any type of basketball versus not having any at all.
Joseph, can't thank you enough for taking the time this morning. I want to hit a little bit on the defense, and you look how Syracuse got to this game. You know, that West Virginia defense didn't really live up to the hype so much, if you will. Houston might not be as big as West Virginia per se, but they're tough, they're athletic. What do you think the focal point is going to be defensively? Is it going to be containing Buddy, forcing Syracuse into contested jumpers, or anything else along those lines?
Well, with the Kelvin Sampson defense, what it comes down to, I mean, everything you just said plus more. I mean, they don't typically focus on one thing. They will blanket you in every regard, and it starts with their guards. They feel like their guards are some of the best defenders on the perimeter and college basketball. They're relentless, and you don't get a lot of second shots against them. They do a few, you know, in terms of statistics, they have a one stat they call it's for tips. And what they do is they make sure that once the ball it hits that rim, that if you're an opponent, you don't get the ball back. I mean, it's for defensive rebounds, and same thing on the offensive end. They are not going to give you as many opportunities as you think. You're right. They're not very big, but like Justin Gorm, for instance, he's their rebound leader. He's, about 6'6", maybe 6'7", but they go after every single ball. And, you know, looking at the numbers, they're one of the best, if not the best, at three-point defense. So, I mean, they've got you covered in every different way, and it goes back several years. It isn't just this year. They simply have inserted guards for the last two runs that they had in the tournament, and the common denominator is Kelvin Sampson. So they play defense as well as anybody in the country.
I know you said they don't square in on one guy, but on the Syracuse side offensively, it really is, at least right now, a bit of a one-man show. Buddy Boeheim is shooting the lights out. Do you think he's more likely to draw Grimes to defend him because of a more comparable size, or Giroux because, you know, he's the AAC Defensive Player of the Year and is kind of the best defender?
I think it'll be Grimes simply for two reasons. You know, Grimes's defense is very underrated. He came in here from Kansas and he was all about scoring, but that's again the Kelvin Sampson influence. They basically told him, you're not going to go anywhere unless you learn to rebound and you learn to play defense. That he is the bigger body. I can see that being the matchup. And also with Giroux's hip, you just sort of don't know where he is until you get on the court. Now, They'll switch up occasionally, but you're right with Boeheim being the guy right now. You know, Houston's been in a situation with some games this year where they've had some really good players from other teams that have come in with gaudy numbers. The one that sticks out, you know, they had Western Kentucky center who's going to be a lottery pick. He came in averaging about 20, and he didn't score until right before halftime. So whether it's in the interior or if it's out on the perimeter, they get to their guy and I don't know what it is, but they do a really good job defensively. But it'll be Grimes' assignment, and this will be big because he's an All-American and he's, you know, on the fringe of that first round NBA, you know, mock draft right now, and he's probably going to leave. So this will be his time to show where he's at with the defensive part of his game.
You mentioned Giroux's hip, so I have to hit on it for a second. Also, we're speaking with Joseph Duarte of the Houston Chronicle here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Giroux hasn't practiced, but you've reported a few times that he says he's in good playing shape. I forget the exact quote, so I don't want to misquote exactly what you said. But how confident do you feel in his conditioning coming into the Sweet 16 game?
this guy is not, I mean, he could be on crutches and he would find a way to get in the game. A funny story, he checked himself back into the Rutgers game, hurt and all, without Kelvin Sampson even knowing it. So that sort of tells you where his mind is, and he knows that it's, you know, this is it. You lose and you're out. He's the emotional leader. They call him the heart and soul. Kelvin Sampson calls him indispensable in terms of what they do, that they're not going to go anywhere without Dejon Theroux. But the hip, he said it's about 70 to 75%. I mean, this is a guy who's probably 150-something pounds if he's soaking wet. And he's not as meaty. So in terms of when he hits that hip, and eventually he is, you know, he's going to get a hard screen or somebody's going to, you know, check that hip. How does he respond? Now, they have a padding on it, and they think that he can go for an entire game. But that's the big storyline. This is the guy, he says he's fine, but, you know, we don't all know. So it will be interesting to see what his pain threshold will be for the game. But when he's not in there, things are really different in terms of how they do stuff. Grimes and Sasser become more of ball handlers, and that's not the way they want to have the offense running. They want it to all go through Giroux and let him do his thing. So if he's close, then that's going to be a good thing for Houston. This is about a 1 to 3 week recovery. And, you know, the fact that he got 5 days this week, it's better than if it would have been, you know, between the first and second round. And, Houston, you know, well, they did go through that, but in terms of only having a day or two more to prepare for Syracuse.
So 7 straight wins before coming to Indianapolis, make it 9 straight now, obviously, after round 1 and round 2. During that span, only 8.2 turnovers per game, which is down nearly 38% from downtown, which is up. Does this feel like this is a team that is just getting better with passing time? And then the follow-up to that, you mentioned it a little bit, but do you think this 5-day layoff does help or hurt a little more?
Well, Kelvin Sampson calls it the Holy Trinity. He bases everything on rebounding, defense, and taking care of the ball. They don't commit a lot of turnovers. I think the most they've had in the season is around 15 or so. So they do a really good job of taking care of the ball. And on the flip side, you know, that was what helped them win against Rutgers. They got 2 key defensive stops by Marcus Sasser on steals in the final minute. So they don't give up points, which I think will help them against Syracuse, because, you know, you look at what they did to West Virginia and the ability there to get the ball back and then convert them into points, you know, that in most cases will doom any team. So on your second part, you mentioned about the layoff, and I think it helps, not so much because, you know, they're on a hot streak or something, because at this point, you know, they've had breaks between the season and the conference tournament. I think it's a matter of they needed some rest. When they got to Indianapolis, they took a day or two because of the quarantine and the having to get the test results in, and their legs were just shot. I mean, they had gone through a pretty rough stretch to end the season because of some rearrangements in the schedule. So anytime you can get a break, it's good. You know, they got some fresh air the other day and went out to the baseball ballpark here and played some cornhole and stuff. So I think you're going to see a refreshed team coming in. And anytime you can get a few days in the NCAA tournament and not have to travel like you used to, everybody's forgetting about that. You used to have to get on a plane, go from one region to another. Everybody's just here, their own beds and everything. I think this helps a team like Houston that really, from an injury standpoint, where Giroux needed a few days.
Joseph Duarte here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We've talked a lot about the defensive end. Let's flip it over now to the offense. For Syracuse, it's always the same game plan to try and stop other teams. It's the 2-3 zone. Does Houston play anyone that has anything like this? And if so, how did they fare against it?
No one has anything like this. I was joking that you probably have a better chance of helping that guy crack his Bitcoin account to get all that money than you do to solving, you know, the 2-3 zone. But, you know, Kelvin Sampson's very familiar with it. He and Boeheim matched up in the, I believe it was the 2003 tournament when Syracuse ended up going on to win the national championship. Oklahoma was the number one seed. And I know it's sort of evolved since then. He's added, you know, the new wrinkles and what have you, but it's the same 2-3 zone. And Jim Boeheim does it to perfection. I mean, he's a master at it. So you look at what Houston faces during the year, you know, they get a little bit of it from like a UCF, maybe a Tulsa. Tulane does some variations, but nothing like this. And what the players have said this week is, you know, they simply can't get caught up in the in all the zone talk. And, you know, they've got their, you know, they're very guarded on how they do things. Even during the regular season, they don't give away a lot of secrets on how they're going to approach things. But they know that it's going to be, well, first of all, this is not a very good shooting team, Houston. They are not good on the first shot. They're mostly not good on the second shot. That's where they're so good on the rebounding. They get those second, third opportunities. And Justin Gorham was telling us that that's where they're going to have to do their damage, because they'll have their trouble with the zone. They're going to be, you know, they may get a really deep three and then another contested shot. And then it's a shot clock at that point. So they know that the just because they're not getting the looks or getting the shots down, that it's not so much that they're not running their offense. It's just, that's what most people do. Even teams in the ACC that see Syracuse's zone sometimes struggle, you know, and they see it twice a year. So, you know, they've got a plan. I think you'll see guys like Fabian White, Justin Warm, some of the bigger guys involved in the middle of the lane, and see how they try to kick things out, because this is a team that really just moves the ball around. I mean, they pass up so many in the lane, close range shots, so that they can kick it back out, and then they hit a three. So, I mean, they are very three reliant, but I'll be interested to see if those same shots that they usually pass up, if they are taking, you know, this time around.
Yeah, so going off of that, you know, I think it's no secret that it's maybe a little bit of a slower paced offense. They like to get set up in the half court. At the end of the day, though, that's less possessions over the duration of a game to adjust to the 2-3. So do you anticipate them trying to push the pace and get out in transition a little more than usual?
You know, they've done that at times when needed this year, like if they're, you know, if they're playing a Memphis. I think they did it a little bit against Wichita State. So the capability is there. They can. I'm not sure quite if how Kelvin Sampson likes to, you know, so much to have another team dictate what they do versus if something's working for them, if that makes sense. So that's where Giroux will come into this, because he can push it real quickly. You know, they do a lot of stuff in transition, and they can cover some floor pretty quickly. But again, if he's not at, you know, at 80-85%, whatever it is that it will make him feel good out on the court, you know, they become limited. And that'll be interesting to see how much they'll push it, or if they're going to just have to say, look, we're only going to get this number of possessions. We're going to have to figure it out, and we're going to have to make some shots. I think this is going to be more of a, you know, 60-something to 60-something type game. I don't think it'll be high scoring, because when you look at the defensive part of it, but Houston can push it. It's just a matter of the right people are going to be available and in place to do it.
One of the big keys usually to breaking down the zone is getting the ball to the high post and then having someone pass out of the high post. Who sticks out to you as the player that's most likely to be parked there and trying to run the offense?
Fabian White. And this is a guy who, his backstory, he's been a starter for 2 years off of the previous NCAA tournament teams, missed all of the season with an ACL injury, came back for the final maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks. But he's sort of the free agent signing that they had. He's come in, very smart guy. I mean, he can do a lot. Whether it's, like you said, you position him there and have him direct things. He's a quick thinker, a good passer. They also use him where he's developed a three-point shot, which is nothing that he had when he arrived here. So if it's not somebody like him, maybe a Reggie Chaney or a Bryson Gresham, I think the two would be White and Gresham. Gorham mentioned that he could be in that mix, but I think it falls on Fabian White, and that will be big, because I think he's averaged about 20 minutes since he came back. So they're going to be rotating some guys in, but I think he gets the majority of I think he gets the most playing time that he's had since he came off the injury, you know, in tonight's game.
Joseph, not to take too much stock into, you know, the seeding and the reputation that everybody comes into the tournament with, but you look at this Midwest region and it's Houston, the 2 seed, Syracuse, the 11. Then you got Loyola, Chicago, an 8, although they probably should have been a little bit higher, and Oregon State, a 12. Is there a feel around this Houston team that, you know, as long as they do their job and play smart basketball from here on out, there's a legitimate chance they could be going to a Final Four?
Well, you know, with Samson, he doesn't let that happen. But I'll give you some background. 2 years ago or 3 years, they were in the same position. You know, they were in a game against Michigan, and that this would have been the second round. They win that game instead of having a buzzer beater, and this is exactly the way that the region played out. And Loyola was part of that mix. So They probably should have already had a Final Four under their belt with Samson. And then 2 years ago, you know, they had Kentucky on the ropes. And if they win that one, they play Auburn and the Elite Eight. So yeah, this is nothing new for them. I think it's crazy how this region has played out. I mean, Oregon State, you know, has to win their tournament, and then they go in and they do it. Like you said, I think Loyola should have been a 5 seed at worst. And then you look at what Syracuse, and of course Syracuse has done this. This is an old hat, you know. This is the third time is a double digit that they're in the Sweet 16. But yeah, right now it's anybody's region. But specifically with Houston, they're very very calm and sort of, you know, focused when it comes to this stuff. They don't look at things one way or another. They know what's ahead of them, and we're talking five slamma jamma territory in terms of how far or how long it's been since Houston's been in an Elite Eight or a Final Four. But they're not going to say anything publicly. They want to see it happen first, and then they'll do the celebrating later.
One of the big wins in Syracuse history that's often forgotten is when the Orange took down Phi Slamma Jamma way back in the day. Yeah.
That's when Joseph, they went to the national championship.
Yes.
Houston.
Joseph Duarte here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Johnny took it in the, you know, the more positive direction of Houston's shot to go to the Final Four. I'm going to take it in the slightly negative direction just because a lot of our fans are on the Syracuse side. Sure. East Carolina knocked down this team earlier in the year, and Rutgers nearly did it last week. If SU were to win, it would be an upset. What is kind of the blueprint to taking down a Houston team that's pretty loaded with talent?
Well, the games that Houston lost this year, the three to East Carolina, Tulsa maybe not, because that came down to two free throws with like a tenth of a second left, and then they lost to Wichita State. Two of those wins, the teams just got hot. I mean, East Carolina came in as one of the worst shooting three-point teams in the conference, and I believe they hit 13 of those games in that game. And, you know, it was just one after another. And I think part of it was Houston didn't look in sync. I think they were at a point where they had a long stretch, legs were tired, and they just didn't play well. I mean, they said it as much, that, you know, they just were not into the game defensively. I mean, you could just tell they were slow to the ball. But, you know, so I don't know if that part of it factors into the blueprint. But if you're, you know, if you get hot, you get hot. And then I guess that's just the way the game of basketball goes, where, you know, if you start hitting shots, so if you're Buddy Boeheim and you get a little bit of rhythm going and, you know, you hit three or four of those early on, you know, that's the recipe. I mean, you got to have somebody. But in those games, there was a secondary guy that could help out. And, you know, you mentioned that Buddy Boeheim is sort of a, you know, a one man or he's been the man lately. You got to have another guy. I mean, you're going to have somebody step up, and that's how Houston is. We don't know who their second leading scorer is on most nights, just because it's sort of spin the wheel and see who it lands on. But if you get hot against this Houston team, even with how well they played defensively on the 3-point line, that's the way they've been beaten, because they haven't really been beaten on the boards. You know, they're a really sound free throw shooting team. If you get them into foul trouble, that's another problem, you know, with the front court. Chaney is foul prone, which forces them to bring in Gresham. Gresham has gotten into foul trouble. And after those two, you don't have a lot. That's where you start getting Fabian White in there a lot. So if you can get to the foul line early, get some of those guys on the bench, Gorham especially, then I think that coupled with the getting hot on the outside, that's sort of the recipe.
Wow, the Cougars sure have a lot of weapons. Syracuse looking for that second guy. Like you mentioned, maybe it's Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard. Maybe it's Buddy Boeheim and Quincy Guerrier. We will get to know in a short span of time. The game tips off tonight at 9:55 Eastern, and WAER starts coverage at 9 from Indianapolis. Make sure to check out our stream on at WAER Sports, WAER.org for coverage there. But 88.3 FM, the only place where you can get the broadcast today. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you. This has been the Ostrom Avenue podcast for Johnny Gadamowicz. I'm Ben Schulman. Make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our YouTube channel as well and our Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.